When We Got to the Seventh is a series of standalone podcasts that tell the story of an encounter with the seventh something. It could be the seventh anything, anywhere, anytime, and features compelling characters and intriguing stories. It's written and performed by me, Emma Clark. Please consider supporting us on Patreon. Our Patreon supporters will get early access to our stuff, exclusive audio that won't be available anywhere else on the internet, and access to our development diary. We've made different tiers of support, starting at just $2. We'd love this series to develop, and we'd love to work with other actors. So please take a look at our Patreon page to see if you'd like to join our team. Just click theseventh.uk and follow the links. This story is called It Was Me Who Was Doing Her the Favour. I knew Danielle was my cousin, but we'd never, you know, mixed. Something to do with something a father said to my mother about a will, and then 30 years go by, don't they? So I'd never known her. Anyway, she was 17 years younger than me as well, so she was a different generation. Then out of the blue, her mother died and she invited me to the funeral. Well, I couldn't say no, could I? So I got to know her. We went for coffee and lunches. She heard about my difficulties, which were nothing to do with my judgment, I might add. I just went into business with a maniac and ended up losing everything. And she offered me a job. She was kicking me when I was down, if I'm quite honest. She only did it so she'd look good. And anyway, it was pin money she was paying. But I took it. And because of me, her business skyrocketed. It was me who was doing her the favour. I never saw an extra penny, obviously. I mean, she gave me a Christmas bonus, but it was more of an insult, really. She works in public relations. Public relations. Makes you laugh, doesn't it? Signed her name Danny, with an I. That kind of woman, you know, pretentious. Or affected. That's what my friend Linda calls her. I mean, she's not met her, but she knows the type. And then Danielle announced she was getting divorced. Said he hit her. Said he raped her. Blubbered and wailed when she told me. I went along with it because you do, don't you? Why didn't you say anything? I said. And she said nothing, just looked at me with a face. I didn't think anyone would believe me, she said later. Yes, I thought. Anyway, I became indispensable. Without me, she wouldn't have been able to go off on business to wherever she went gadding off with God knows who. She wasn't behind the door with moving on with her life, put it that way. And I offered to look after her children sometimes. Paid, obviously. I mean, my time's valuable and I'm no mug. She had two children under five, so you can imagine how hard it was for me. One was autistic and didn't speak, so it was easier, actually. I used to take them when I did my shopping and to see my mother to save me having to go at the weekend, you know. They used to watch television while I did the ironing. They had a whale of a time with me. Danielle was always on at me to meet up with the rest of the family, mithering. She wasn't in our circle and she didn't know any of the others, and I said they were busy in any case. Asked me for the phone numbers, asked me if they were on Facebook. She was needy, you know, went to counselling, said she meditated to breathe through the moment. I mean, I ask you, but a job, isn't it? And then Graham, my husband, died. Heart attack. I mean, it was expected. He'd had surgery. He was my second husband, but he was a nice man. I got my sister-in-law to ring Danielle to tell her I didn't want to speak to her and deal with her questions. And then there were flowers and texts and cards and letters. She bombarded me. I didn't respond. I was obviously going to take time off work. Anybody would. And then one day, about 2 weeks later, she caught me on the hop when the rest of the family were round and rang me.
Asking how I was doing, if I needed
No, everybody's been fantastic, I said, looking after me. I don't need anything.
Then she said I didn't need to rush back to work to take all the time I needed.
Oh, no, I said. Work's the last thing on my mind, Danielle. I can't even think about coming back to work. It's too soon. And I put the phone down. Of course, the rest of the family heard what I'd said to her. She wants you back at work before the funeral, said my brother. That's terrible, said my sister. Well, I won't be having anything to do with her, said my other sister, who, frankly, has always been a pain in the arse. But on this, I had to agree with her. Danielle came to the funeral, didn't she? Rocked up in a hat. A hat? I didn't speak to her. I didn't look at her. Nobody really spoke to her. But at the wake, my friend Audrey gave her a piece of her mind, and without even saying goodbye, Danielle swanned off. It was my husband's funeral. After a couple of weeks or so, I went back to work. Just turned up one day. I didn't need her approval. And then everything carried on. But we weren't pally. She moved house, invited me round, wanted to know what I thought of her new furniture. That was her always showing off. I hate nests of tables, I said. That shut her up. Anyway, 16 years had gone by and I was still working for her. By then her kids had grown up and the other one had learned to talk and was actually reasonably bright. And she'd restructured the business. And then she announced she didn't need me anymore. I just got up and walked out. I never heard from her again. But then my mother died. She was 93 with a filthy flat and a lot of clutter, so you can imagine what I had to deal with. And there was going to be a funeral that needed sorting, obviously. We all got together at a convenient pub to arrange everything, and I'd booked a table for six when, out of the blue, my other brother turned up. We're not in contact. He has a wife who's a model. And suddenly, we had to find a seventh chair. You can imagine the uproar. Said he'd seen we were meeting up on WhatsApp. So he sits down. Have you told Danielle about Mum? He said. Mum was her godmother. Nobody said anything. Eventually, my youngest sister said, we don't speak to her. She's been horrible. Why? He said. And then it all came out. I said, she wanted me back at work straight after Graham died, demanded it, with me in a state on tablets and everything. She was cruel and thoughtless and very, very inappropriate, and we are all in agreement. He leaned forward on the table and I could have hit him. He put his hands in a steeple, and if there's one thing I can't stand, it's that. That's not how I heard it, he said. I was there when she spoke to you on the phone. I was with her in the room. I heard exactly what she said. And she didn't say that. In fact, quite the opposite. And then he said, as well you know. Fancy saying that to me in front of everybody with my mother fresh dead and not yet buried. Danielle should be included, he said. She was good to you. I laughed at that. And now she's very seriously ill. What's wrong with her this time? I said. He said she's got stage 4 breast cancer. But I think she's only saying that for attention. Couldn't be stage 2 or 3, could it? Couldn't be 6 months to live, could it? No. It always had to be worse. She was always dramatic. And if there's one thing I know about her, it's that she is a liar.
You've been listening to a When We Got to the Seventh podcast story. It was written and performed by me, Emma Clark, and was produced by Rick Watson. Our theme music is composed by Francesco Giovanangelo. Find out more about us. Just visit theseventh.uk for bonus material and a whole bunch of stuff. If you like When We Got to the Seventh, please consider supporting our podcast on Patreon. To find out what our Patreon supporters get, follow the links on our website. There are loads of benefits and loads of different tiers. You can listen to When We Got to the Seventh wherever you get your podcasts. We really hope you enjoy this podcast. See you next time on When We Got to the Seventh.